What we're going to do is we're going to move on to a different section that's a very famous section in the Chumash. I have a feeling we once did a shiur on it. I don't remember in what context, but the part of the Chumash which has those upside down nuns, do you remember them? Well, we're going to get to them. Fascinating. It's actually, I'll tell you how you would know it even more famously, is the famous psukim that we say when we take out the Sefer Torah on Shabbos and we all sing Vayihi bin Saya Ha'arayn, those two psukim. So we'll get to them. They're beautiful psukim. We say them every Shabbos. It's always nice to understand the depth of them. But before we get to them, there's a few other topics that come before that, after what we learned last week. So on page 780, You're on page 780. That was what we did last time, that the Jewish people, that when they set up the Mishkan and how they traveled with the cloud and how they were so eager, so to speak, to follow how Hashem set out for them to travel. That was all very positive. We'll come to not so positive soon. But let's go to page 782. Skip to page 782 for a minute. The next topic that Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, if you look in chapter 10, Perek Yud, in Chumash Bamidbar, it says that Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Asei lecha shtei chatzitzreis kesef, right? That you should make two trumpets out of silver. And he made them, he carved them out of like one piece, as it says, hammered them out. And here in these psukim, they give the purpose of these two silver trumpets. It's interesting that they're directly associated with Moshe Rabbeinu. They're his trumpets, and it seems that he makes them out of his silver. Although he does mainly, he uses them, but also there are other uses, and then they get passed down. So what are the main uses of the two silver trumpets? Just very quickly, one is to assemble the nation. The other one is to signal the beginning of a journey. Do you remember we said the cloud goes up when they have to journey? But one of the signals is also the trumpets, and the people know it's time to go. Also that when the Jewish people had to wage battle, they would also blow the trumpets. Part of that is interesting. It's to instill fear in the enemy and to give confidence to, it's like the battle cry, you know, to give confidence to the people who were going out in battle. And the fourth thing, that certain communal karbanos, sacrifices, had the trumpets accompany them. So there are different uses, and that's what the psukim go through here, all the different uses of when they would use these two silver trumpets. If you look on that page 782, if you look at pasuk Yud, that's the last pasuk of this section, verse 10. It says, Uviyom simchaschem, and on the days of your festivals, uvimayadechem, sorry, in days of your gladness, on the days of your festivals, uberashechatshechem, and on your reshchedesh, utkatem bechatzitzreis, then you will blow these trumpets, al oilei seichen, you see, it says on the specific sacrifices that you will bring, al zivche shalmechem, and they will be a remembrance for you before Hashem, Ani Hashem Aleikechem. This is a very famous pasuk. We say this in the Yom Tif davening, because that's when they used to blow it, was on Yom Tif. So this is part of, it's just a little section. It does have depth, but we are not going to go into it. I'm sorry, we're going to leave it. The trumpets also have a symbolic Kabbalistic thing, that they're made out of silver, and Shtei Chatzitzreis symbolize the concept of two halves, that Moshe Rabbeinu and Hashem make up one whole, not person, Hashem does make up a person, but one whole leadership thing, Shtei Chatzitzreis, two halves, and the concept of the Jewish people being a half and Hashem being the other half, and the concept of the unity, so that's all symbolic. But we can see that they have practical purposes, these two silver, made out of silver specifically. We know that it also, Kabbalistically, silver is the concept of love. Love of Hashem and Hashem's love of the people. So that's also part of the idea. Now, if you go to the bottom of that same page of 782, and we have in Pasuk Yud Aleph, then it gives you a date for the first big journey. Okay, here we're going to start our journey in the desert. Now, we are leading up to, let's not forget, we are in Parshas Bahaleischa. The Parsha that follows Bahaleischa is Parshas Shlach, which we know immediately when you say Parshas Shlach, what do you think of? The Meraglim. So here they are at this point, just keep in mind that they think they are going to enter the land of Israel very, very soon at this point. This is after a year, so they got the Torah in the month of Sivan, and they spent, you know, whatever, that whole time there because of the sin of the golden calf, and then after Yom Kippur, they started building the Mishkan. Now we'll see in the month of Iyar, so it's almost a year since they've received the Torah, and now they're still camped there at Har Sinai. They have built the Mishkan, and now they are going to about to embark on their journey, and they think to enter Eretz Yisrael. So let's see what takes place. All the next few stories take place actually in a very short amount of time, but they are so significant and bear so much weight on the whole destiny of the Jewish people. So let's see what, and Moshe Rabbeinu himself. So if you look on the bottom in Chamishi, right, Pasuk Yud Aleph, it says, Vayihi bashona hashenis, and it was in the second year, b'chodesh hasheni, as we said. So the second year from when they left Egypt, and it's now the second month, which is the month we're in now, the month of Iyar, and it gives you the exact date, be'esrim b'chodesh, on the 20th of the month of Iyar. Now, today we are on the 15th. And what happened at that point, finally, Na'aleh ha'anon me'al ha'mishkan ha'edah, so the cloud goes up, lifted from upon the tabernacle. As we mentioned last week, that's a signal, time to travel. Okay, and what did they do? Vayisu b'nei Yisrael, the Jewish people traveled, l'masa'eim, according to their travels, according to their journeys, mi'midbar Sinai, as we say, they are still very close to Mount Sinai, in the Midbar of Sinai. And then where did they go? Vayishkan ha'anan b'midbar paran, and the anan rested in what's called Midbar Paran. Midbar Paran is not such a long distance, but it's actually very famous for that's where the Meraglim story happens. Okay, so we're not going to read the next few psukim. What happens now is, just like we said at the beginning, but they're actually doing it, now it details how they traveled. So the order, right, that first was the tribe of Yehuda, as we said, the Degel Machane Yehuda, and then the Mishkan, how the family of Merari, one of the three sons of Levi, right, that family was the one that did the hard labor of taking apart the Mishkan. So they would take it apart as Yehuda was beginning to travel. And then Kehas would actually afterwards lift all of the holy vessels. And when they would arrive, Merari would be able to set up the Mishkan before Kehas arrived to be able to put in the vessels immediately. So there was a whole system, and it describes it, and how exactly who came where in their trip, who traveled where. I would like to see now on the same page 784, if you go down now to Pasuk Chaf Ches, this just summarizes, Pasuk Chaf Ches, verse 28, it says, Eile Masei B'nei Yisrael, this is the travels of the Jewish people, Litzivaisam, according to their legions, Vayisau, and they traveled. Now, there's a little interlude here, okay. Remember, they're still at Har Sinai, and we're going to have it's just a small little few psukim, that first I thought, but I don't want to skip it, because it's just interesting to see, just interesting piece of information, as we might say, and also something that we do know about, and yet sometimes we're a bit vague. So now, we know Moshe Rabbeinu married Tzipora, and Tzipora was from Midian. And we know that when he married Tzipora, afterwards, when he re-entered Egypt to take the Jewish people out of Egypt, the famous thing is that Tzipora didn't come back to Egypt with him. Remember, he was going to bring her, and Aaron said, why are you bringing her? Aren't there enough people in there that you want to bring more, and all these people want to leave? So he sent her home. So she spent that time with her father, right, at home in Midian, but they did rejoin, obviously. She rejoined her husband. They had two sons, and the question also, Yisrael also came. That's the famous parashas Yisrael, right? The father-in-law himself. He also, and the famous thing that we know is that he not only joined the Jewish people to, so to speak, be with them, but he actually converted according to most opinions. Not every opinion, but according to most opinions, Yisrael properly converted and became a Jew. The question becomes, though, what happens to Yisrael? I mean, we just assume, well, he converted, they came back, and they joined the Jewish nation, and he goes with the Jewish people throughout the 40 years in the desert. But it's not so simple. And let's see these psukim, and we'll see something very interesting. It's interesting to understand how this works. Let's see. So if you look on the bottom, it is Pasuk Chavtes, verse 29, Vayomer Moshe. So Moshe says, L'chayvev, to Chayvev, we have to see who Chayvev is, and who is Chayvev? Ben Reuel, the son of Reuel, Hamidyani, that gives us a little bit of a clue, from Midyan, and what does he say to him? And then it tells us who it is, Chaysen Moshe, the father-in-law of Moshe, but his name is not Chayvev, we thought the father-in-law's name is Yisrael. So if you look at Rashi, the truth is you have two sheets in front of you, it's easier, you see that I even made it a bit bigger, the one that has only two, that booklet, the top one on your thing. I'll show you something Rashi says. And if you have the Chumash, you can look into the Rashi. It's just very small, the words. It's Rashi of, if I see it here, yeah, Rashi Chav Tes 29. So Rashi says right away, Chayvev, who is Chayvev? Oh, let me see if I have this. Oh, no, you don't have it. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, it's the page before, and I didn't make that one. Okay, so I'll just tell you, you could look in here, but it's very small. Rashi says, who is Chayvev? Chayvev is Yisrael. So why is he called Chayvev? So Rashi says, and we know he actually had many names. That's the truth. I think he had seven names. Rashi mentions here two of the names, Yisrael and Chayvev. And why was he called those names? And Rashi tells us, Yisrael, because a whole parasha in the Torah was added because of him. And the word Chayvev is from the word beloved. Because he was beloved, first of all, not he was beloved, but he held the Torah very dear. He cherished the learning of Torah. Interesting. Chayvev, how do you say, what would be a Hebrew word? Lechavev, to hold dear, to treasure. And he treasured the learning of Torah, which is interesting. Of all parts, doesn't say generally, just says the learning of Torah. He did cherish everything, but he especially cherished learning of Torah. And actually, it makes sense because what was Yisrael known for? Yisrael was a tremendous philosopher. He was the priest of every kind of religion. He was a real seeker, a real searcher. So to him, the Torah aspect, the learning aspect of Yiddishkeit was especially important because he wanted to understand and to get the depth of everything. So and that's why he was called Chayvev. And here we highlight that squad. Yes, that's right. Initially, when he was there as one of the advisors. Exactly. That's why he had to run away afterwards. Yeah. But he was an interesting character because you mentioned Avraham before. He had a similar quality in a sense where he was his own man. He was a person who didn't have a problem with going against what the mainstream thought was. And that we know that because at the time when Moshe married Sapphira, do you remember when he came to Midian, everybody was shunning those girls. Why? Because Yisrael, who had been one of the highest priests and the highest respected people, but as soon as he had a certain idea that he thought was correct, he went with that. He was a seeker of truth. So he wasn't a popular person. He was a person who went with what was true. And therefore, many people over the years, because he went from one thing to the next till he found the Torah, he lost many, many admirers, many people who loyal. Nobody was loyal to him. He was on his own. So it's a very interesting man, Yisrael. Okay, so here we have that his name is Chayvev, and what happens here? So in the Pasuk it says, Moshe Rabbeinu says to him, Noisim, we continue in the Pasuk, Noisim Anachnu, we are traveling, El HaMakayim, to the place, Asher Omar Hashem, that Hashem said, Oisai Eten Lachem, I will give to you, which means we're traveling to Israel, Lecha Itanu, go with us. Already shows you that he's not intending to go with them. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu has to say. Come with us. Obviously, he's not intending. It's interesting. And Moshe Rabbeinu, not only he has to sort of almost entice him, and we will make it good for you. Ki Hashem diber toiv al Yisrael, because Hashem has spoken good for Israel. In other words, there's a lot of good waiting for us. But why did he have to convince Yisrael? What was happening here? Where was Yisrael about to go? Why did he want to leave? And who is he leaving with? This is an interesting thing, because Tzipora wasn't an only child. Yisrael had a big family. Remember, he had seven daughters, and he had sons, and he had lots of things. So the question, I mean, if he had sons or not, I don't know, but he had son-in-laws, he had other, and it seems that they came. He brought them when they came to Har Sinai, and here he is. Is he leaving on his own? Is he leaving with his family? Why is he leaving? And why is Moshe so eager for him to stay? It's interesting, all the different parts of what's happening. Just look at the next two psuk, and we'll see the conversation. So what does he say? Vayomer Eilav. And now Yisrael is responding, Loi, Eilech. He said to him, I shall not go. Why? Ki imel artzi ve'el meiladati Eilech. I will go to my land, to the place where I was born. I'm not going with you. I'm going home to where I feel is my place. And then Moshe Rabbeinu says, Vayomer, al na ta'azav. He doesn't take that answer. He's begging him, don't leave us. Ki al kein yadata chanaisenu bamidbar, because you know our encampments in the wilderness. V'hayisa lanu le'enayim, you will be for us as eyes. Such an interesting language. What does it mean, you'll be for us as eyes? Such an interesting thing. Fascinating. He actually is encouraging Yisrael to the point that he's telling Yisrael, if you stay with us, you will be able to help us. You'll guide us in the desert. But do they need a guide? We just learned they have the cloud, they have the fire, they have the chatzah, they have everything. A guide? What do they need a guide for? What's he going to do for them? Such an interesting thing. So I saw such a small, beautiful pshat that the truth is, Moshe Rabbeinu, nobody needed Yisrael. He wasn't necessary in that way, and especially not to be a guide. Even if he knew the desert inside out, it doesn't matter because they had such divine protection that they didn't need it. But if we think about the Jewish people at the time, they're about to leave Har Sinai. Now they're about to journey Taka into the desert. Even though they think it's only for a short time, it's still extremely daunting and extremely scary. So there would have been some people amongst the Jewish people who were filled with anxiety. Absolutely filled with dread and anxiety, entering the snakes and the scorpions and the desert. Moshe Rabbeinu, a very beautiful pshat, felt a sensitivity for those people and thought that just having Yisrael present will just make them feel a little bit better. And he thought, for that, it's worth it to beg him to stay here. Even though the people shouldn't be afraid, because Hashem is promising to protect them. But if they are afraid, he's worried about them. It's quite a beautiful pshat. Anyways, or Hayisalanu le'einayim could even be on a higher level. Like, einayim could also be not the guide simply, not to go and what to do, but perhaps have insight. We know Yisrael had tremendous insight already because he gave that advice how to Moshe Rabbeinu should judge the people, how he should delegate. So you'll be such a good advisor for us. The Medrash tells us something interesting, that Yisrael was very hesitant to stay. Because Yisrael looked at himself, and Yisrael is interesting, because even though he's such a brilliant man, and he was a person who had, over the years, accumulated a tremendous amount of knowledge and a tremendous amount of leadership roles which he had had, he comes to the Jewish people, he sees Moshe Rabbeinu, and he sees Yahshua. And it says, he felt himself, Moshe Rabbeinu is like the sun. Yahshua, we know, is compared to the moon. He said, I am just a little candle. What use is there? What purpose? Of what need is there? Of a little candle when there's a whole sun and a whole moon? That's what Yisrael felt. What should I do? Where will I be more valued and needed? In my country. I can influence the people there, try to make them convert, try to make them, even if not fully convert, but to understand that there's one God. I'm just a little candle. A candle is good in the darkness, not near the sun. That's what the Medrash says. Very interesting. Yisrael needed purpose. That's a very fascinating thing. We all need to feel that we have a purpose and that we will be able to contribute. But we can see that Yisrael had that drive very, very much. And yet Moshe is still saying no, trying to convince him to stay. It's interesting. Because Moshe Rabbeinu says to him, even though you feel that you are a candle, you will be like eyes for us. You still have tremendous purpose here. Whether it be to help us, advise us in the right ways. You're underestimating, undervaluing who you really are, which is quite an amazing thing also, because this is also human nature, that sometimes if you find yourself amongst either very talented or very intelligent or very learned people, a person could feel very, very like nothing, you know, they could. And I have nothing to contribute and I have nothing to offer. So Torah says that's not the way it works. Every individual has something to offer and every individual actually matters. So this is part of the lesson you can see here that Moshe is trying to convey. But a bit deeper than that, we'll see in a second. Let's read the next pasuk. Then he says, V'hoyo kisei lechimanu, and Moshe Rabbeinu is still convincing him. If you will come with us, what will happen? He says that if you will come with us, then V'hoyo hatoivahu asher yetev Hashem imanu, then all the goodness with which Hashem will benefit us. He says, what will happen? Ve'itavnu lach, he will benefit you as well. So the Mefarshim say, what are we referring to perhaps? And this is an interesting concept, because Yisrael was what was one of the big fears Yisrael had? They were about to enter the land of Israel. He says, you're going into the land of Israel, and I know that the land of Israel has been divided according to the tribes. That leaves me with no real estate. I don't have a portion. So what will I do? And he actually said, how will I support my family? I will have no portion. And it's interesting if he will get a portion. This is a whole question or not. And Moshe here says, don't worry. All the good that the Jewish people will get, you will get. Sounds like he's going to get a portion. It's not so clear. It's not so simple. It's not so simple that he will get a portion. So there is one opinion that there was a piece of land near Yerichai that it says that was actually left empty and that was supposed to be given to the ones who would build the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. They would also get that piece in Yerichai. Ended up that Yisrael's children got that piece. So they did end up getting a portion, but it wasn't so clear here. And this was also part of Yisrael's hesitation. Quite a fascinating thing, just on a simple level. Let's just see what he says, but how does he respond? Interesting thing. It doesn't have a response after this. We don't know what happened. The pasuk doesn't even tell us. Did Yisrael go with them or did Yisrael return to his land? It doesn't say. And actually, there's different commentaries, different opinions. Okay, so I think the most widely held opinion is that Yisrael himself went back to his land. He felt he had to go back to influence the people. He had a responsibility. And that's what he said. I have a responsibility. I have to go back. But he left his children with Moshe. So his family stayed with the Jewish people, but he himself went back. That's according to most opinions. And also some opinions say that he did go back, but he did rejoin the Jewish people afterwards, as they entered the land of Israel. If he was alive, I'm not sure, or something very close to that. Or another opinion is he didn't return immediately, but after they did the sin of the Chet HaMeraglim and they were going to be wandering in the desert for 40 years, then he said, well, now for sure I have to go back because what's the point of me being here if they're not entering the land of Israel? So there's different opinions as far as if he went immediately back, if he went back totally and never came rejoined. But according to all opinions, even if he didn't leave his children then, later he sent them back. And we have historically the sons and the grandsons of Yisrael mentioned in the prophets in Shoftim. So they definitely became part of the Jewish people, right? We know Yael, and they played big roles in helping the Jewish people and also becoming totally part. So it's fascinating. That's right. That was the incredible story. There's just one more small thing, and then we'll move on. I just saw just a beautiful lesson. Okay, so on your sheets that I was going to ask you before, I just thought this was so, it's simple, but so beautiful. If you look at the I think it's page Kuf Samach Dalet. I'm sorry, you don't have it on there. Do you see that one? That's the first one. Look at the Svarnu. He says, Yisrael said to Moshe Rabbeinu, no, I'm not going with you, but I'm going to my country, the place of my birth. So the Sfarnu says, Shaloi tispol ziknasi avir eretz acheres umizaynay seha. This is such an interesting thing. He says, my age, my old age, will not be able to bear the climate, the air, the atmosphere of another country and its food. Wait, it's so what we have now. Do you see that one on the Sfarnu? It's in the middle of the page. Such a fascinating thing. It's exactly the same thing that people say now when it's time to when people have to emigrate, they can't. It's too difficult. It's very difficult to leave the place that you're used to when you get to a certain age. And he said, I won't be able to bear it. That was a simple thing. So Moshe Rabbeinu has no choice, but he has to accept it. But nevertheless, he still tries to convince him. And why? So now I'll tell you something interesting orally also that the Sfarnu says, and this is a very big thing. Why was Moshe so adamant, like really trying to convince Yisrael to stay? So this is a very interesting thing because we find that Yisrael comes to the Jewish nation, right? And he tells them when he comes, I heard all about the wonders and all the miracles. And we know that he learned, you know, he saw the Jewish people and all the greatness that Hashem is doing for them. Now imagine if he leaves. What does that look like to the rest of the world? Moshe Rabbeinu said to him, you're going to cause the biggest chilul Hashem. Because if you don't stay with us, then who will respect us as a people? If you're able to leave us, that means we're not a people that you want to stay with. That's a very bad impression on the whole world. It's very interesting how chilul Hashem does make a big difference. And he puts it on Yisrael, no. Please stay with us. It's good for you and it's beneficial for us. So that's another thing. And one more small thing, I know I made the copies that I should show you on the next page, on the Kli Yakar. I'm going to show you something very nice, he says. Because he plays on the words, it says, if you look into it, I didn't bracket it, but it's towards the bottom. And it says, L'cha itanu v'heitavnu lach. Go with us and it will be good, it will be beneficial. So he says, Kan shoyalim ha-mefarshim. So that is a few questions. The mefarshim ask, Me'achar shalei nisratza Yisrael leilich. Yisrael didn't want to go imohem b'haftacha rishaynam, even after Moshe Rabbeinu first promised him such good. Why does Moshe Rabbeinu think he was going to promise him again more? Like, what's, how's he going to convince him? What's Moshe Rabbeinu trying to do, right? And he says, again, I'm going to do good for you. What's he going? What's the benefit of that? And also, the big question that he asks is, if you look at the words, he says, V'oid, She'omar noisim anachnu v'lcha itanu. We are traveling. You see the word noisim, traveling. Go with us. So the Kliyaka says it's not. That shouldn't be the sentence. Shouldn't be that way, because either he should use either one word consistently. You can say noisim anachnu, and we're saying ki noiseya, or I don't know the right diktok, but like a nesia, a travel. Or lech, go with us with the word lech. Why is he using two different words? One is naiseya, which they both mean travel, but halach means to go, and nesia is to travel. So he says a very beautiful thing, actually a very deep thing. I want to show you. Go to the next paragraph. V'nira shaloshin halicha noifel al tnuas haraglayim levad. When you're talking about going halicha, that's walking with your feet alone. That's just simply physical movement. That take a person from one place to another. But it's possible. That even though he is taka traveling to another place, you can still be connected to the place that you are going from. So you can physically move yourself from point A to point B, but you can still be in point A. Right, your whole mind and your whole self, and we know that happens often, whether in the good or the bad, as we say, but whatever. Okay, so therefore he says like this, avaloshen nesia, but when you use the language of nesia, that means hataka kaileles lagufa yulu machshavtai mikol v'kol, right? That's talking about really moving. That's transplanting yourself totally, your mind, your heart, your physical self, everything, right? That's what the Baal Shem Tov says, b'mokm shemachtav machshavtei shel adam, right? Where a person is, where is a person found, where his thoughts are. So here, you can be somewhere, but you're not there. But nesia means you actually are there. Okay, so he says like this, so what was Moshe Rabbeinu saying? That's why Hashem said to Avram, lech lecha, right? Lech lecha me'artzecha. Why did he say lech lecha from your land first to Avram? Because Hashem knew that it would be difficult for Avram to noisei from his land. When you're first leaving, it's interesting when people change places of where they live. The first few years, you're actually in two places. It takes a long time until a person actually identifies that this is my new home, and that's it. This is my home. For a while, you're in both. For a while, you're only in the old place. Then you start to be in two places. I went through a stage where you're in no place, and then finally, you're in the place you are, right? So that's what happens when you're journeying. And that's why when Avram, when it said lech lecha, so first, Hashem only expected him just to physically at least move. Yeah, your mind will still be what you're used to, but at least make the physical change first. So here, let's see how it'll apply over here. Let's see. I go to the next paragraph. That's why over here, Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking to his father-in-law. He says, first of all, interesting thing, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't call him Yisra. He calls him Chayvev, actually to give him special honor, because he doesn't want Yisrael to think that I'm, like, I don't know if the word is mistreating, but I'm treating you differently because you're a ger, or maybe I do want you to go back home, or maybe we don't really want you. So he's extra sensitive to Yisrael because Yisrael is a convert, and it's actually quite amazing. It actually says, it teaches us that converts are very beloved. That's why he's given these extra beautiful names. But further than that, he says, I want to just see over here, let's see. So, all right, that's why he hints to him, no, I'm going to love you, I'm going to treasure you, and you are precious to us, and therefore we want you to stay with us. Okay, so then he says, noisim, I'm sorry, it's on the next column, the fifth line. V'amar noisim anachnu, ki legabe etzleinu nikra nesia min amakim. So now he's talking to Yisrael, and he has an interest, Moshe has an interesting thing in his mind. He thinks, See, we are the Jewish people, right? And Hashem has promised us the land of Israel. So we are only in the desert now. We came from Egypt. We didn't come from anywhere that we want to be, right? So we don't have any ties to anything previously. So we are traveling a nesia, right? Our travel is full intention to get to the new place fully with our minds and our heart. That's where we want to be. We're not attached to anything before. But that's why he says, Nois im anachnu. We are traveling. But you, Yisrael, you are probably only hoylech, going. Because understandably, you still have a connection to where you come from. And actually, Yisrael does confirm that. Because he says, I'm going back to the land of my birth, right? So he does have a connection. But Yisrael actually rejects it. He's not so happy with what Maisha says. And he says to him, it's true that I have a place that I come from, not like you. You guys have no place, right? You're the true wandering Jew in a sense, where until you get to Israel, you don't have any settled place. Everywhere else, you're really a foreigner. But even me, he says, you think I am hoylech, but don't think that. Ki loy hoylech. I am not a hoylech. I am also a Nisaya. My heart is also in the land of Israel. But in the meantime, I have to take a little bit of a diversion and go back to where my purpose is to convert and to influence those people. And then I will also arrive in the land of Israel. So Yisrael says, Loi hoylech. You think I am a hoylech? No, I am just like you guys. I also want to be in Israel. I also love it. Even if I don't necessarily have a proper portion, which is quite an amazing thing. And this is what Yisrael was saying to Maisha. And so quite a beautiful idea that the Kli Yakar brings out just from the wording of the Pasuk. If we look at the Pasuk, you can see it in the word. Let me just see. He says, Im el arti. Then he says, Vayemer al na tazayv. Let's just see. Right, if you will go, like as Moshe Rabbeinu said. But before that, let me see what he says. Ah, right, I am not going in that way of eilech, right? Ki im el arti ve'el meiladati eilech. You know where I'm going? Eilech? To my old home. That's eilech. Eilech, the temporary going. The permanent going is when I go to Israel. The temporary going is when I go back to Midian. See, that's how he shows it in the Pasuk. It's actually quite beautiful. So to my country of my birth, that's really not where my deep connection is. That's not where my heart is anymore. But I feel I have a purpose and I have to go. Okay, as we said, it's not clear, but it leads on to the next Pesukim. And I want to show you in the next Pesukim what happened now. We're going to read quickly through the next few Pesukim and then we'll go into our sheets. I'll show you something and I'll share the screen. But if you look into Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Okay, and then we're going to see those nuns there. So Pasuk Lamed Gimel says like this, Vayisu mehar Hashem, and they traveled from the mountain of Hashem, derech shloishes yamim, a way of 3 days. Va'aren bris Hashem, they say elifneim, and the ark, the bris of Hashem, traveled before them. So we know that up until now we always learned that the cloud went. This is something funny. It sounds like the Arayin is somewhere there, out there, out of the cloud. It's a bit strange. We have to understand what's happening here. Then it says, very important, it says like this. So it says, Derech Shleishes Yamim. Why? Why was it going in front of them? Losur Lahem Menucha. To actually, to plot out for them a place where they can rest, where they can camp, properly, where they can say, he says, search for them a resting place. That's why the Arayin is going in front of them. V'anan Hashem aleim, and the cloud of Hashem is upon them, yoimam, during the day, binosam, as they are traveling, min hamachane, from where they were camped. I want to read the next two psukim, that's the last two psukim of this chapter, and you see those nuns, it's important to see them, they're upside down nuns there. Vayehi bin Saya ha'arayin, the famous psukim that we know we say in davening on Shabbos when they take out the Sefer Torah. When the ark would journey, vayomer Moshe, and Moshe would say, Kuma Hashem, arise Hashem, v'yafutzu oivecha, and let your enemies be scattered, v'yanusu misanecha mipanecha, and let those who hate you flee before you. We're going to see it inside, but I just want to show you something interesting. It says, those who hate you. Who are we talking about? Hashem, he's talking to Hashem, right? Who can hate Hashem? How can Hashem has an enemy? Who cares if something like, it doesn't even make sense. So actually it says, anybody who hates the Jewish people is an enemy of God. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying. So anybody who's anything against the Jewish people, directly they're an enemy of God. So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu says. Anybody who acts in that way, they should be run. Ubinucha. And when it rested, Yoimar, what did Moshe Rabbeinu say then? Shuva Hashem. Rest, reside, tranquilly Hashem. Rivavais Alfei Yisrael, among the myriad thousands of Israel. We say that's 22,000 is the minimum number. This is a very beautiful pasuk. What does it mean? We don't know exactly what it means yet, but you can see just on a very simple level that there's a concept that when the Arayim travels, when the Jewish people travel, Moshe Rabbeinu is asking for special protection, and that the enemies of the Jewish people should be afraid, and they should scatter. Hopefully the ones who are coming to already ready to attack, they should just somehow disappear. And the ones who are thinking of attacking should just not even think about it, right? They should become so afraid that they can't do it. And it's interesting because we say this every single Shabbos, it's such an important thing. We know that unfortunately, until Mashiach comes, we will always need to have the extra protection. The upside down nuns we have to discuss. Before we go inside, I just want to share something very cute, out of context, and then we'll go inside. Something very beautiful that I saw. It's interesting, not beautiful, just interesting thing. So we're talking here about the Ark, which is the Torah, the Sefer Torah, I mean actually the Luchos. We're in the Ark, the holiness, which represents Hashem. That's what travels before the Jewish people. So I saw such a fascinating write. I want to find it because I want to see it exactly. So there's a whole discussion, and this is a philosophical discussion, which I know can be quite emotional for certain people, but just interesting, about what happens if there is a danger to a community. You don't have it in your sheets, because I just want to tell you, if there's a danger to a Jewish community, right, and there is a very righteous person who lives in the community, whether it's tzaddik or the leader of the community, and this actually, unfortunately, this question was quite relevant not that long ago, what should happen to that person? Should that person remain in his community? We would imagine the virtue of his, you know, his tzitzkus, right, his righteousness, not only will protect him, but will protect the people around him, besides the comfort and the security that he will give to the people around him. That's one way to look at it. Or perhaps he should be taken out to safety, because why should he be put in danger? Such a special righteous person. Why should he be put in danger if you can find a safe haven for him somewhere else? Now, this came up in history a few times, and it's written also by the Chassam Sefer. I'm just trying to find my page because I wanted to see the exact stories. But there was a very famous tzaddik, Rabbi Yecheskel Landau. He lived in Prague. And as we know, throughout history, there was always stories. So there was a terrible whatever it was against the Jewish people in Prague. And he wanted to leave. He really wanted to leave. He said, let me leave where I can hide. And what was his part of his logic? He said, if I leave, then at least I won't be using up all my zchusim, because if Hashem protects me, that's going to be using up everything, you know, all my schar or whatever it may be, all my reward, so to speak. And I'll daven for you where I am in safety, don't worry, but let me leave. The community refused to let him leave. They said, no, we need you here. You are the leader, and you have to remain with us. And actually, certain Gedalim agreed with them and said, no, that even though it's true that he will be using up some of his schar, and perhaps that's not such a positive thing, but doesn't matter. He's the leader, and he has a responsibility to the people. You have to stay with your people. So we'll see in a minute how it connects to the pasuk. But then there was another story. And there's a few others. I don't have the paper. There was also with the Chassam Sefer himself. And there was another Gadol, where there was also one of these towns, whatever it was, in Europe. And there was a terrible decree. And the leader actually, not only himself wanted to leave, but more the community wanted him to leave. And they said, we are in danger. If we have you with us, we have to protect you as well. That's even harder for us. Let's put you somewhere else. It says he moved to Frankfurt, so it was somewhere in Germany. You go there where you'll be safer. When you're there, your mind will be more at peace and you will be able to daven for us. So you'll be much more beneficial when you're out there than you're here with us in danger. So very interesting. And then there's a story about the Chassam Sefer himself also, that apparently there was a whole discussion and he didn't know what to do, and he did leave, and he said he davened for his people. It was only for a very short time. And he was able to maintain presence of mind. And he ties it to this pasuk. And he says an interesting thing. Vayihi bin Soya ha'arain. When the Arain, and who is the Arain? The Tzaddik, the one who is the Talmud Chacham, the one who contains the whole Torah. When he travels, then v'yafutzu ayvecha, the enemies will scatter. Because the traveling of the Tzaddik just getting up, already will cause Hashem to look down at his people, and miraculously the enemies will become afraid and they will scatter. And that's what the Chassam Sefer says, that that is one way to look at it. Obviously, as we can see, there's two ways of looking at it. Some may say, no, we want the Tzaddik here so that the Arain is with us because we want that protection. And some people will say, no, it will offer more protection if it goes ahead. And that ties into even the Pshat over here. Because it says over here that the Arain traveled, the Jewish people traveled a distance of 3 days. But it's interesting because it says that the Arain traveled in front of them. This sounds like the Arain, there was a distance between the people and the Arain, even though the Arain does offer protection. But the Arain went ahead to pave the way to provide the people with the protection that they needed afterwards so that they can follow. So you see, there's different ways of understanding. It's quite a fascinating thing to understand how it all works. But we have to understand the pshat of all the psukim, just how it works simply, what we're talking about with the Jewish people in the desert. Just a fascinating thing. Which Arain was this? What do I mean by which? I only know about one, right? He says in the Mishkan they built an Arain. What was in, what do we always know? What was found in the Arain? What was put in there? Do you remember? Okay, so the Ten Commandments. How many Ten Commandments did they have? Oh, okay. So they had the broken ones, those pieces, and then they had the complete ones that Moshe Rabbeinu brought down. So according to most opinions, we always learn that they were both together in one Arain, right? And that was the Arain that was found in the Mishkan, that was very holy, and even they somehow managed to fit a Sefer Torah. There's a whole discussion how, whatever it may be. There's an interesting opinion here that no, perhaps there was another Arain that we're not even told about, that Moshe Rabbeinu had built. And this Arain contained only the broken Luchais. And that was the Arain that traveled ahead of the Jewish people. Interesting, of all the things, the broken Luchais still offer protection. Quite fascinating. You'd think helped. They would remind Hashem of something not good. But no, they still have that incredible holiness. Because the Arain with the full Luchais, you don't want to send it out of the cloud. You want it to remain protected and you want it near the people. So interesting opinion, two opinions. The Ramban, it's fascinating, the whole discussion of arguments, big arguments. According to some opinions, only one Arain. And how does that work here? Because this was an exception. Usually the Arain did not go out. The Arain was with the people in the middle, you know, in the place where all of the vessels were carried. But in this specific travel, because remember, this travel was supposed to be the final one, like just before they were about to enter the land of Israel. This was supposed to be their whole journey through the desert. Hashem was going to make a miracle. And they were actually, according to some opinions, they didn't even travel for 3 full days. They traveled a distance of 3 days in 1 day, according to some opinions. But never, whichever way it was still, that was it, this was going to be their trip. So over here, the Arain as we know it, with the both Luchais, the broken ones and the full ones, the Arain that was made, you know, the holy one, went in front of them to pave the way, to secure the way, to make sure that the enemies are all petrified and scattered, and that the Jewish people can actually travel and get to their destination so that they should be able to enter the land of Israel. So there's different ways of looking at it. But it's just important to keep in mind that this was supposed to be the journey. According to many opinions, they did travel for 3 days. And this was a bit of a problem. They traveled for 3 days and 3 nights consecutively with no stop at all. After having been at Har Sinai for almost a year. Not simple. It's like we know now. Travel is harder when you don't travel often. They were very tired. They were very, like, iskamuchit, you know, as we say. It was too much for them. And that led to something negative, we'll see soon. Even though, according to most opinions, why did they have to consecutively travel for 3 days? Because the purpose, the Arain was looking for a good place, somewhere nice for them to camp. And until they get to somewhere nice, it's worth it, he said, let them keep going, get to the nice destination. This was the kindness that Hashem was doing, and instead it backfired because the Jewish people didn't have that sense of gratitude. So it's quite a fascinating idea. So let's see a little bit more inside in your... Okay, so now you can look in your other sheets. I'll share the screen here. And now we'll look at the actual farshim here. Okay, so if you look at your first sheet that you have in front of you, okay, let's say it says here. Let's see. It's on. I'm sorry. It's the bottom line. Derech of Rashi. Derech shleishis yamim. A 3-day distance. Do you see? Mahalech shleishis yamim halachu. They went a journey of 3 days. Go to the next place. B'yayim echad in 1 day. Shehaya HaKadosh Baruch Hu chafetz lachnisam la'aretz. Because Hashem wanted to bring them into the land of Israel miyad immediately. Right? It's like, you know, it's like when people take the road trips. They take their children and they drive. Some people have this thing, you know, let's drive the full 11 hours, whatever it is. Now it's like 9 hours to Melbourne. No stops. We'll get there faster. And then the kids get impatient. No. Stop. We want to stop. So that makes it longer. Here Hashem wanted them to get in quicker. But it was a little bit difficult for them. Let's look at the next Rashi. V'arein bris Hashem neisei lefneim shleishes derech shleishes yamim. As we said, the Ark of the Covenant of Hashem journeyed before them a 3-day distance. So here, Rashi's opinion, zeh ha'arein hayotzei imahem. This is the arein which would go out with them, la milchama, to battle. And what was in this arein? Shivrei luchais munachim. The broken pieces of the tablets were placed in it. It would go ahead of them a 3-day distance. L'sakein lahem, to prepare for them. Makim chania, a place to encamp. So according to some opinions, this was the ark that even when they went, like with David HaMelech's time, it was always this ark. It wasn't the other one. Although we know that the Luchais were once captured. That's a whole big story in time of David HaMelech, and actually in time of Shaul even before. So that time they made an exception and they took out the original Arayn, which did contain the real Luchais. And that was a very big problem after when it was captured. Okay, that's just history. Let's see. Now, as we said, the cloud was over them by day. Here Rashi says something very interesting, because the truth is the cloud had to go. Do you see it's in the middle? It's Pasuk 34. It says, Lama Dalid. And the cloud led the way, right? And as we said, like a pillar, right? As they were traveling. But there's a fascinating thing here. It says, Shiva anonim ksuvim b'masayim. 7 clouds are written in their journeys, which means it says 7 times. And what does it show us? It shows us that they had arba me arba ruchais. There were 4 on the 4 sides of the camp. The echad l'mayla, one above. The echad l'mata, and one below. The echad l'fneim, and one ahead of them. Which, as we know, was which would make it very beautiful. That one would lower that which was high, umagbia es hanamuch, and raise that which was low, in order to make the road level, right? So it was flat and easy for them. V'hayreg nechoshim v'akrabim, and they would kill snakes and scorpions, right? These are all the medrashim that we learn. But it's interesting how it worked. The clouds literally surrounded the camp, and then the one cloud in the front would mamish make it so comfortable, if you want to say, and so protected for them as they were traveling. It's important to keep this in mind, because we're going to lead now, as we said, we're going to see next week and the week after, we're going to come to all of the negative stories in the desert, all the complaining and all the sins. And yet, here we have the presence of Hashem, not only in a revealed way, but to make them so comfortable, to go out of his way to do everything for them, and still it doesn't work so well. Let's see. So we have to it's interesting to keep that in mind. Let's see. Min amachane, from the camp. Mimakim chaniyasam, from the place of their encampment. Just want to see. I want to see this. One interesting thing we're going to see today, and we're going to continue next week. If you look on the next page, so it's Pasuk 35. Vayihi bin Saya Arein, as we read. What does Rashi say about it? Asalai simaniyais. Remember those upside down nuns that we have to discuss. We're going to discuss it more next week. It's in the Sefer Torah. It's quite a fascinating thing. According to some opinions, these 2 psukim are considered a whole chumish in and of themselves. People are not aware of that. We say there are 5 chumashim, but according to some opinions, there are 7 chumashim, because chumish bamidbar is divided into 3. And these 2 psukim are a chumish unto themselves. And we'll see different signs of how we can understand that. And what is so significant about these 2 psukim that make them a chumish unto themselves? So let's see. So Rashi says, we made signs for this. Why? Milafanov umilachrav, in front of it and after. Laimar, to say, she'ein zem mekaymai. This is not its place. These psukim don't belong here. V'lama nichtav kan. Now, where do they belong? Okay. We're talking about the travels. So do you remember when they started originally in Bamidbar? When we described how they would travel? I mean, even now we described it a little bit because they were actually traveling. But at the beginning of Chumash Bamidbar, we read all about how they, you know, how they camped and all the Dgalim. That's where this pasuk should have been, because this is the, what Moshe Rabbeinu would have been saying, and this is what would have happened. But it's not in the right place. And according to many opinions, it's what we call 50 parshiyos. Parshiyos meaning sections. 50 sections ahead of where it should be. That's why it's a nun that's used as the sign, but it's upside down. We'll have to see why upside down. And it's in the wrong place. Why put it in the wrong place? Why put it here? So Rashi says something interesting. Kedei lahafsik bein pur'onus lepur'onus. In order to make an interruption between, he says one passage was, deals with trouble, and literally pur'onus is punishment, and another. What are we talking about? Okay, so the truth is that this is a big question. But in the next perek, we're going to come to negative stuff. Vayihi ha'am kimisayinim. The people were complaining. They were kvetching. What were they complaining about? Some people say they were complaining about the fact that they have to travel so much. Some people say they were complaining about the mon. They were sick and tired of it. They were complaining about the fact that they don't have meat. And then Hashem gave them the meat. And then comes to the next story of Miriam. And then we have the story of the Meraglim. It's all not so good. So it says that the Chumash doesn't want that we should have so many negative things consecutively. It's too heavy. He wants to make a little interruption in the middle, break it, something positive, something inspiring. So we put these psukim here. But the question that the Ramban has is an interesting one, and I'll leave it with that, but just because it's a fascinating thing. Because it sounds like you want to make an interruption, but all the complaints that I'm talking about happen afterwards. What complaint are we talking about? Because we've already read these pasuks, I want to tell you. It says Vayisu, right? They traveled, right? From where? From Har Sinai. The Medrash says something interesting. And this is quite like, oh, it's like help. We think of the Jewish people, we think, oh my gosh, is there any hope? It says the Jewish people spent almost a year at Har Sinai, right? Now they're moving on. They're about to enter the land of Israel. It's true that they followed instructions, right? They left when they were told to leave. But there's ways of leaving from somewhere. Where are they leaving from? They're not leaving from Egypt at the moment. They're leaving from Har Sinai. What's Har Sinai? Har Sinai is the place which literally made them into who they are. The biggest spiritual encounter that they ever had. And it says they left eagerly. And the example, the Medrash says, like a child running out of school. You know, the bell rings, 3 o'clock, and you run. Maybe the teacher will give me more homework. Maybe Hashem will give me more mitzvahs. That's what it says. The Jewish people left eagerly because they felt overwhelmed by all of the amount of Torah they were learning, it seems, and they were scared to get more. We have to understand what that means. We'll see next week. But this is the negative. And because they left eagerly, that's already a negative. What that does is it leaves already a negative taste. In other words, it means that they don't feel so connected to Hashem. The great revelation of godliness. And that leads to all the dissatisfaction that they have afterwards with the mun and the fact they don't have meat and all the different things that they're worried about. All of it starts with that feeling of running from Har Sinai. That's the first problem. When you run from Har Sinai, you're already in trouble. So just on a simple level, when we need to learn, and we all need to learn, and we all need to inspire ourselves with learning, if a person doesn't feel a connection, well, sometimes you don't feel connected to everything you learn, but you do feel hopefully connected to something, and you have to keep on inspiring. And if a person feels that they don't have to learn, they're doomed almost, you know, you might say. It's the recipe for complete disaster. A person cannot remain a real Jew, so to speak, without continuously inspiring themselves and growing in their connection to Hashem. So you can see that's how it already begins. That's what Rashi's saying. But we put these psukim in the middle, and these psukim we'll see next week will inspire us. Just one more quick thing that I saw that was very beautiful. You know, we talk nowadays, we travel. So it's talking about traveling, right? And when the Aron traveled, Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu would say, all the enemies should scatter. So a very cute thing it says, this is the first place that we have an association or something which is similar to the concept of Tfilas Haderech. You know, when we travel, it's always so funny because when you're on a plane, you know, when should you say it? You know, when do you say it? Or even when you're traveling out of the city, you know, at what point do you say? But we know we say Tfilas Haderech, and Tfilas Haderech, we ask Hashem to protect us. This is not actually the first. It says Yaakov Avinu also said Tfilas Haderech, but this is the most famous Tfilas Haderech. Look what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, that Hashem should get rid of all the enemies, let them scatter. Nobody should be able to harm the Jewish people as they are traveling. And this is for all eternity, not just in the desert. This is something which Moshe Rabbeinu said and says and continuously hopes that we will have this protection as we travel through life, through the journey of life, that Hashem should protect us. And this is a form of a Tfilas Haderech. Perhaps that's also why it has its own little section. And we'll see next week more what's so significant about it and the depth of it. Yes, Amritz Hashem.